Now that you're here, we're all in the company of your cool aunts. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And this is the Your Cool Aunts podcast, where we follow the lives and times of cool aunts through Claire's diary. So welcome back. Or, if you're new here, hop on over to our website, where you'll find all of Claire's diary entries, her photos, and our backstory, too. So, here we are.
Hi there. How are you today?
Hi there. I'm good.
So what do we have today?
Okay, there's a little flag warning coming.
Flag warning? Why?
Claire's off the rails again.
Flags can be good, though. What's she doing?
There's a little post-it note here, and it says, a new series, Love, War, Champagne.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It could be good. It could be bad. I don't know.
Depends.
No. Okay. Do you have anything before we begin?
No, I thought you'd get into it because it sounds intriguing.
Okay. Here we go. Claire's note.
Okay.
Nieces, aunts, and friends. And Claire says, here we go with a series that dates back in time. First, just a bit in my own time, and then a few generations back to the time of World War II in northern France, specifically the Champagne-Ardennes region. Yes, of course, much of my diary tends to refer back to my time there as a college student on my summer internship with those renowned champagne houses. You know me well enough to know that I'll take any excuse to return there in body or mind. I don't know what to say. I'm filled with anticipation here. Where is she taking us?
Keep going, keep going.
However, Claire says, in this series, we will return to the experiences of a few other people who are also of this place, and that's italicized and in quotes, as Laurent loves to say. I guess that's her reference to terroir.
Her favorite word.
Yes. Terroir. There's so much going on in their stories. Love, mystery, danger, and thankfully, yes, diaries too. They almost seem to me to be answering, in their own time, questions that we might pose to them today about their experiences, such as, what was it like when?
Oh, man. That's always a curious question to ask.
Well, if you could talk to people who were gone, you know? And she says, oh, by the way, there are several of these episodes. So when you finish this one, there's more to come. And we'll talk again soon. Claire.
Adding a little mystery to this whole thing, isn't she?
You know, is Claire a diarist or a mystery writer?
I don't know. Come on. What's going on? Tell me.
Well, it's so funny that you would say that because this diary entry is titled Come With Me. And you just said, come on.
That was not intended.
I know, because I'm sitting here holding the diary. Anyway, hop on in. Here we go with Love, War, and Champagne, a series brought to us by Claire. Laurent is always starting something with me, usually by handing me a book. Sometimes it's an object, but always it's intended to start a discussion after I've read and had a chance to think about whatever it is that she started. There have been a few times when this happened, and then months, or in one instance, I think more than a year had passed before we had the conversation that Laurent was intent on having, meaning that memory was being challenged as much as opinion or intellect. The learning curve is steep, and I never fail to leap at the chance. Actually, I never considered declining the offer to think with Laurent.
She's making it more mysterious. It's like, what
I
does
know,
she
everything
have?
Is a tease,
what is she
isn't
giving
it?
Us?
And there's a little subheader here. It says, Huckleberry Finn. Another thing you should know about my cool aunt is that my mother tagged her with a tongue-in-cheek nickname of H. Finn. It tended to surface only during summer vacations at the Lake Cottage. Her arrival there announced the departure of that classic summertime boredom. Laurent could turn a mundane task into a fascinating and sometimes fun-filled adventure. Whenever she starts something, anything really, she has a certain way about her that makes everyone want to join in, and we did. What am I thinking of? Like Pied Piper, Huckleberry Finn, you know, any of those characters,
she gets people
right?
interested, doesn't she?
Yeah. And Claire continues, like the classic story of Huckleberry Finn recruiting all into his fence-painting adventure. Laurent always confirmed my mother's prediction that we'd no longer be bored with summer at the lake after Laurent's arrival. Of course, we painted things, from boat bottoms to fences, and we cooked and we read and once played cards until dawn. This is how Laurent earned the T's or honorarium of H. Finn.
That's very cute.
She never mentioned
that before.
No. We have
a couple of entries where she talks about being at the lake.
Yeah, I'm flashing back to some of the stories she shared about, you know, making pampardou and going down to the dock and just sitting Laurent and Claire starting
That's such a
the
sweet
day.
Memory. You know, I can just feel summer.
I think that diary entry was called something like Lost and Found the French Way. Lost, meaning pampardou, lost bread, right?
Right.
Anyway, back to this story. Claire continues. Everyone knows legends don't typically die off easily, and neither do nicknames. And from time to time, my mother still teases Laurent with the H. Finn term of endearment on a birthday card, and once even on a table place card for a formal dinner. That's been funny, right? You're looking for your name, and then you see H. Finn. It's like, okay, I get it. This is truly the nature of cool aunts like Laurent, informal leaders all. They have a way of making things far more interesting as they engage us into participation alongside them. Happy nieces all we are to join in. Well, I'm loving this.
Yeah, this is an interesting change of mood.
Oh, I was confused for a second. I see what she means here. There's another subheader, so that's why I was like, what? Anyway, and it's called Read This One First. So, Claire says, all that to say, Laurent handed me a book. I cannot recall how many times I've started a diary entry with this sentence. I was just about to say that, right?
I was going to say, haven't we heard this before somewhere?
I know. You know, it's funny. This is a little bit different than we normally are with Claire's diary entry because we're usually interrupting and doing a lot of comment in between. And I think it's got us both intrigued as to where she's going to take us.
Intrigued. Like, what's next? What's next?
Right. All that to say, Laurent handed me a book. I cannot recall how many times I have started with a diary entry with this sentence. This was different in a few ways. This was no ordinary book. Heavy, tattered, and clearly very worn and old. No title on the spine. And I return the gaze to her, asking, what's this? And Laurent responds, it's a young woman's diary. She's left a few volumes for us. Okay, here comes the mystery, right?
What young woman? How many volumes? What's in it? That's what I want to know.
Okay. Claire says, suggesting that I start by finding today's date. And there were no years noted either. I opened it and I just started at the beginning. And the page was marked only December. More mystery, right? Mm. The reading was thankfully very slow due to the unfamiliar handwriting, patterns of an ink-dipped pen, and my starts and stops to consider and reconsider every word or stain on the pages. At first, I felt as though I was invading someone's privacy, but I cast that notion aside, trusting that Laurent would never have shared it had that been the case, and believing in this theory allowed me to continue reading guilt-free.
You know what's really interesting? When I was just envisioning what the page looked like. You know, when you think of a printed page, you pick up a book, you read, and it's the page, the letters are just there and you're reading. But in this instance, it would appear to me that if you have the ink, the handwriting, first of all, the age of the paper, and I can imagine the drips of ink, you know, because it's not a perfect.
No, yeah, when you use an ink dip pen, it ebbs
it
and
blotches,
flows, sort of,
yeah.
You know, some places it's heavy and then it drags out and it runs out of ink and then you have to dip again and continue.
So it's a picture in and of itself. It's not just what's being written, what's written, but what you can imagine.
There's a visual to this.
As you look at this thing, yeah.
Well, it tells us, now let's do a little mystery probing here, ink dip pen, you know, ballpoint pens, or even if it was a pencil, but this is clearly an ink dip pen. So that indicates it's either before ballpoints, or you could still use an ink dip pen today, but she's told us it's old.
The
it indicates to me
old.
It's before ballpoints came into common use. And what was that, like the 50s, late 50s?
Yeah, I think it was around the late 50s. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Shall we move along?
Go ahead, sure.
Before I do that, we have the visuals of this book. It's old, it's heavy, it's kind of worn, a little funky looking from banged up. It's an ink dip pen in the handwriting. We don't know whose it is. It's December.
We don't know the year. What do we know? We don't know much.
But we know this. Claire says, thrilling, frightening, and highly emotional. Characters described with precision. Places, that almost felt familiar to me. On these few pages, she was at times pining for the man who had professed his love for her. He'd been gone for almost a year, and she hadn't heard from him in months, causing her to worry that he may never return. Her heartbreak leapt from the page amid her complaints about work and the Cavs and her desire to make a difference. Her talent for description impressed me more than most or all things I've ever even read. There was something about the writing that spoke to me in a way I'd never even experienced before. At times, it left me thinking this could be almost a screenplay without adding much beyond a little dialogue. Everything else was there, though, the setting and the dramatic tension and the ebb and flow of each. And it left me thinking that I never achieved this level of emotional communication in all of the writing I'd done through the courses of my English major in college. And the more I read, the more I wished I had had this writer's insight, her ability to get to a feeling in so few words. She was succinct and creative. I stopped for a minute or two to check myself on whether I might have been growing a trace jealous the more I read. No, it was just a great read, and then abruptly reminded myself that I was reading someone's personal diary. I'd gotten that lost in the developing story. This was the story of her life.
Wow. Gives me goosebumps. Well, I think when she says no other story had the emotional connection she felt to this. And you know when you get lost in a good book and you're really there, you're right there with the writer. And this seems, it's even deeper than that from this, what she's saying.
This grabbed her. Yeah. Yeah, it sure did. I'm just going to continue on. I'm intrigued. I feel like I'm as intrigued with this as Claire was with the diary, right? The next subtitle is Left Hanging? ? And Claire says, I turned a page. It was blank.
Oh, no.
As were the next 20 or so pages.
Oh my God.
Until an envelope pushed open the pages, like one of those annoying magazine subscription cards demanding my attention. He finally wrote to her. The date was written by hand on the corner of the envelope, December 25th. I could see that it was very old, but I still had no idea when these feelings and ideas made the journey from heart and mind to hand to pen and finally onto the page with trails of ink. Where had the letter started its journey to ultimately find her and settle into her diary? And then for me to be reading it all these years later, what was the situation that they obliquely referred to? At first, I was expecting context to eventually reveal itself. And when it didn't, I searched for it. And when I couldn't find it, I hoped for just a hint. I asked myself aloud what this was. A diary? Was it a script? Or maybe even a draft novel? And Claire says, I checklisted a few elements of fictional writing. A struggle of thought, an unfolding love story wrapped in a mystery. I had been reading for more than 3 hours and didn't even notice. Beyond my opinion and reaction, the absence of time passing is a clear indication of a riveting story. Or then again, was it the story or was it in the writing? I had nothing more to go by other than their mutual single letter signatures, B and L. Well.
So we don't know who this person is who sent this letter other than their initial.
B for him, L for her.
Why was that? Why did they write like that? I wonder why.
What are you thinking? We are so lost in this.
I just don't know. It's raised more questions than it's given us answers. I mean, other than the fact that we know it's somebody's diary from a while ago, and we know there's a B and there's an L involved, but we don't know who they are. Is that it? She doesn't say anything else?
No, she ends that section, just B for him and L for her. So she's reading someone's diary. It's a man and a woman, and the woman is missing the guy and worried about him. And he writes her something dated Christmas.
Does she tell us what's in the letter? No. What's in the letter? Come on.
This is
don't
awful.
Give it up.
No, this is awfully good, I should say. Back to the village with Laurent, says the next section subtitle. As you may remember, Laurent has a celebration at her farm prior to the champagne harvest every year. You know, Claire, you kind of dropped me off there without explaining.
I was just thinking the same thing. What exactly, where is she going with this thing?
Let me go back a page.
Maybe you missed something.
No, I didn't miss anything.
She would just leave us with B&L, and that's
well,
it.
She tells us, you know, she's reading in this diary, the writing stopped, and there was the letter from, or card from him, from B, from the initial B, to L, and there was something dated on Christmas. She doesn't tell us what it was.
Does she tell us what's in the card?
No.
No.
No, but she continues talking about Laurent. Laurent's celebration at her farm prior to the champagne harvest. It's an invitation never declined by anyone who receives it. Okay, Claire, we know that. The trip and the perfect vacation in my favorite village with the Greneau family is the one event in my life that is unmovable. And Claire says, I think of it as the start of my new year. And while I do not wish to change it, the event does evolve and only ever by the hand of Laurent. Now it makes sense. So now she uses my arrival at the farm to issue another diary volume, but only after we've had time to discuss the last one. I never know if there's going to be another volume after finishing the last one. What I do know is that she was intent on this mission years ago when she presented me with a pen, a blank booklet, and advice to sort out my feelings and thoughts on those pages, as had several of the women who preceded me there in Champagne. Although it was more than a decade ago, I can still recall many of the details of that visit from Laurent. The setting was on an early Sunday morning under the pergola at the Greneau Vineyard House. She had sensed that I was adrift, and like a coulant, she showed up. She offered me a path, not a solution or an answer, something I needed to work out for myself, and she called it a diary legacy. I guess I've been recruited by H. Finn again. Okay.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, like, Claire.
Get the puzzle pieces together.
Here. So the situation she's referring to is when Claire, during her internship, the first summer she was in France, Claire was living in this perfect world, perfect internship with a great host family in a sweet French village, and she was working at these incredible champagne houses, giving tours of the coves.
Don't forget meeting new people.
And all that, yeah, she's written extensively about that. But she was in a funky place. And Laurent sensed it, brought her a diary, and told her this will help. I believe that diary entry was called Diary Legacy.
I believe you're right.
So what I'm getting from this is that what I see Laurent developing here is when she gave Claire the diary back then, she was continuing something that had been going on for a few generations.
But unbeknownst to Claire.
Well, Claire wasn't aware of it. Laurent will always offer an idea or a beginning, but she won't do it for Claire, which is the right thing.
That's what a coulant is.
So she has indicated to Claire, sort your things out in the diary. And she called it a legacy then, as those before us in Champagne have done. And I will add this little side note of some of our experience in traveling through Champagne and all the Champagne houses is, there's always a diary involved in these tours. They proudly display, you know, a journal or a diary kept by, you know, the Veuve Clicquot, you know, the widow Clicquot with the secret formula. So, I mean, we've talked about that in the past.
But I think that was a real mode of communication, like letters were. You know, I think keeping a diary was just something you did as a matter of course.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's why there was so much back then in terms of accumulated letters and things of that sort that we don't expect today.
Well, I'm looking back at the last couple of lines. You know, this is another indication of Claire's age. I just want to point out something I've noticed here. She said it was more than a decade ago that Laurent gave her this advice. So what was Claire, about 18 or 19 at the time?
Right.
So now she's in her 30s, and she's still keeping a diary. And now she's writing about people keeping diaries, not to be confusing. She's engaged in the tradition or the legacy of a woman in Champagne with a diary, thinking about her life and talking about things. And so I think Claire has opened up this series that she's calling Love, War, Champagne. We're seeing why she's named the series that. At least we're seeing indications of why it's called Love, War, Champagne. This woman is working in the cob. She's complained about it. She's pining for someone and concerned about him. And it's during wartime, obviously. And
she hasn't heard from him in a while.
Yeah, right. They're in Champagne. So now we understand the title. All that to say, we now understand the title.
But we don't know any more than that.
No,
that
we
little
don't.
That little bit that she's given
no,
us.
We don't.
Is that the end of it?
It is.
So, wow, I can't wait to read the next one. Who is B and L?
That's there's the mystery.
I want to know that.
And I'm sure she's going to reveal it over the course. I hope she does. I think we're so caught up in the mystery. We're a little quiet today.
Yeah, we are a little quiet today. But it's something new and it's something exciting. We haven't had an opportunity to see somebody else's diary, someone she's connected to. And you said at the beginning, I think you were quoting that she was so emotional about seeing this. So it's more than just another book. You know, it's more than somebody else's book. It's something Laura.
Yeah, no,
has
this is not
her.
A shared novel. Like, what'd you think of the, you know, of the book? Like, what was it, Queen of the Desert, the book that she shared with Claire some time ago?
Nothing is happenstance.
I believe Laurent to be the type of person. Actually, I'm remembering this. Laurent has been described as someone who doesn't waste time or effort, gets to the point and she moves on, and hates it when other people kind of dance around an issue and can't get to the point. Remember?
Yes.
Remember
she's not a procrastinator.
And I think that in leading Claire or providing Claire with some of these life moment type of things, she helps her with the internship. She helps her participate in a legacy, engage with the legacy that is yours. And now she's presenting historical reference to it. So here's one of those diaries from the legacy I was referring to.
Yeah, but you know there's something more. I can't wait to find out what it is, but you know there's something more to it.
I can't guess. Is it a relative? Is it just someone, a woman from Champagne? Is it?
And when you talk about the Cove, right, you mentioned the Cove, and people lived in these places during the war. So
they survived there.
They
Without
survived.
Them, I can't imagine how they would have gotten through it. They would have had to have leave.
They would
the
have
area.
Bombed them to death. That's what would have happened, right? So
yeah.
So these were places that, you know, yeah, they're known as wine cellars, but they were places where people actually lived. Hospitals were built there. Children were taught there. So they become very special places in times of conflict.
When you take a tour and I want to say it's in the Pommeray Coves. It might be in several of them. But they'll show you how areas of the Cove, think more of like big tunnels. And sometimes there are great cavernous areas with 50-foot high ceilings. You know, they're big. But then sometimes they're just like passageways, tunnels. But they're open. It's not creepy or anything. And there are air shafts, too, that go up to surface. But they'll show you on these tours, like, this area was designated as like the sleeping area, or this was the infirmary, or this was where they sat the kids down for, you know, their version of school at the time. They continued on with life as best they could. I remember one specifically, the chalkstone of the walls, or lime or chalkstone, whatever, it's quite soft. You know, you can cut it with a knife, like a stick of chalk is soft. And there's an image of like a little like church, you know, like a very primitive carving of a church,
like a kid
would do it,
yeah.
With a little steeple on it. And that was the chapel area. In other areas of the Pommeray Coves, there's a significant, substantial bas relief carving of Louise Pommeray.
Bacchus.
Yeah.
The god of wine.
You know, these grape themed, vineyard themed things. I mean, and they're big. They're a little funky from the dampness, a little bit like green mold or stained from the water seeping around.
But you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking that these things were cut out of the ground. You know, they were cut hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Well, it's a leftover from the Romans.
The Roman period. And when you think about how they still serve such a great purpose now for what they do now, but also in times of, you know, when there is a war, how the people of Champagne have used these underground places. There's a reverence, there's a solemnness to it.
Yes.
Of sorts when you walk. It's like walking into a church.
It feels very historic when you go through it. And I mean, they work with that. It's meant to. We certainly wouldn't be the first to observe the brilliance of the Romans and their engineering feats over time. They brought the water aqueducts, distributed water through vast regions, and they built many of those with the stone that was taken out of the ground f- from these. So they tunnel down and cut these blocks and lift them to the surface and build with the block.
Right. The whole town was built that way.
Yep.
But when I also was thinking about during the war, when the whole town was basically wiped out, both wars, one and two.
There were very few buildings left standing.
But underneath, but below ground,
was life.
Was left intact. And there was life, and people were operating
and
their
understand
daily lives
too,
underground.
There are hundreds of kilometers of, I'm sure it's thousands by this point. The network of cobs under that region is amazing. And some of them are quite deep.
And what's really interesting is there's a certain similarity to them because of their shape and how they were constructed. But there's also a uniqueness with each Champagne house.
Yes.
They're not all the same.
No, they're
not.
Which is
a very, you'd think, well, they just dug up the ground and that was the end of it. No, there's a certain uniqueness to each personality, if you will, to each cove. And we've been to pretty much all of them, many of them.
Yeah.
Lots of them.
A lot of miles.
We've had a lot of champagne in a lot of these cobs. But this is an intriguing story. I'm fascinated by what she has to offer and what she has offered us.
Yeah, another little side mention, too, is don't forget, that far below ground, it's temperate. It's somewhere around 50, 60 degrees. The downside is it tends to be a little damp because there's some seepage, water seepage. It's not like wet with deep puddles or anything.
But it's not ever really cold.
No. So it's darkness and dampness that I'm sure after an extended period of time down there, it could make you a little, It's incredible.
It is incredible. And it's amazing. It's just amazing.
I think also some of my memory or reaction or association with these coves is probably influenced by maybe a movie or two that I've seen of wartime France and, the resistance and Nazi Germans, and the occupation of France and people trying to survive and hiding out, hiding things and sealing off parts of the tunnels. And
it is amazing.
I couldn't put my finger on what movie it was, I'm sure part of my association is coming from something like that.
You realize how creative you had to be to take something that you have during peacetime and make it of a different type of use when there's a war or a conflict.
I'm remembering also if you ever have a chance, the next time you're in Reims, at the Runart House of Champagne, they have a display there on the surface side, let's say, where it's beautifully done, artistically well done. It's sort of a diorama in miniature. It shows how the Romans excavated the stone. So it's a three-dimensional sort of thing with a cutaway that you could see below the ground. And you could see how they used rigging to haul the stone up through a narrow passage to the surface. And that's the beginning of the cobs of the region. I think we need to wrap it up.
Okay. So, I'm still looking forward to that next episode.
Well, we're into the series of war, no, love, war, champagne, in no special order. So come on, let's keep this conversation going. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're there. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And we'll see you next time when we're
back at the mic.